This Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM Toronto. And we're joined by Tony Leah, author of The Truth About the GM Strike, General Motors Strike of 1937, if I got that right from memory. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hi, Phil.
Well, something came to my attention I thought was very important, and I know you follow this very closely. The broad question is, okay, we've been threatened by Donald Trump. I haven't heard any Democrat shaking his fist or hers saying, oh, you mustn't say those things to Canada. Canada's our dear friend, and we're going to oppose you. It seems to be a typical American kind of atmosphere of, oh, he said that, maybe we should. There is, in the United States and Canada, labor movements. In the U.S., it's called the AFL-CIO. Some people add CIA. In Canada, it's Canadian Labor Congress. And I'll put it this way, theoretically, from this, ask you, should not the labor movement have its own point of view about how to handle a threat from a multi-billionaire who says he wants to annex us? And what so far is going on in terms of labor's response?
Those are great questions to discuss, because clearly workers in Canada are affected by what's going on, the insecurity, the economic disruption that we seem to be heading into. And workers should be meeting and discussing and making plans, deciding what our goals and demands are and what we can do to advance those. And clearly the Canadian Labour Congress, which is the central labour body for unions in Canada, should be leading that effort. I don't see much evidence that they are. They did issue a statement on Friday saying that there should be a response to the threat of tariffs, but it's very short on details and demands and does not seem to be accompanied by any effort to bring unions together to really take action. Mm-hmm. It's calling for a joint approach. In fact, the president of the CLC said that was needed was an all hands on deck, cross partisan approach, and that seems to be playing into the hands of our Liberal government, which claims to be leading such an effort and has been able to rope in a few unionists in a body that Trudeau is calling a council to advise his government on dealing with these threats. And frankly, I would be embarrassed to be a member of that group when you've got a bunch of politicians, mostly Liberal, and lots of CEOs of corporations who do not have the interests of workers top of mind, and one representative of a union, which is Lana Payne from Unifor. Mm. How can you be part of a body like that, including CEOs of corporations which are non-union or anti-union or have very suspect records, and think that you're making some contribution by being one member of such a body?
Yeah, and my guess is that they don't get the biggest chairs and they don't get the most mic time. It'd be
The word window dressing comes to mind.
Yes. Well, speaking of window dressing, there's a famous senator who's going to be there to look after the interests of labor, Hassan Youssef.
Well, he didn't say that he was there to represent the interests of labor, but he's there to represent some interests, and he certainly parlayed his term as leader of the Canadian Labor Congress into an appointment by Trudeau as a member of the Canadian Senate, which he still is.
Wouldn't it be great if there's a hearing over who gets appointed and who are you representing and that kind of... I have to ask, first of all, before you go to a meeting like that, why wouldn't there be a big discussion about, we want to know what our members think, and here's what we think, and here's a whole bunch of issues we have with the monopolists of North America. You guys send us back to work at the, you know, railway workers in the U.S., railway workers in Canada. You send back, you order people back to work, post office and elsewhere. So we want you to stop doing that before we agree to cooperate on, or rather, take an independent point of view.
That would show some self-respect. The problem is that the one representative of a union who's been officially named to this council is the leader of a union that is not a member of the Canadian Labor Congress. So, in effect, the Canadian Labor Congress has been completely sidelined here. And you're right.
So what do they do? They collect dues and spend them on somebody?
Yeah. What do they do? Yes, good question. I would hope that this would be an occasion at which Unifor, which has, you know, been talking about this a lot as a serious threat, would recognize that the very first step that should be taken is to rejoin the Canadian Labor Congress and try to revitalize that body to be meeting and discussing and making common cause as workers, as unions, first before getting, you know, occupying a chair on the platform with a body that's clearly dominated and run by the Liberal Party of Canada and their corporate owners. You know, and rubbing shoulders with CEOs of corporations, including corporations that are in industries that Unifor is part of and wants to represent. So the CEO of a company called Linamar, which is a major auto parts company, non-union, is on this body.
They're representing labor, I guess.
And they're representing themselves. They're in their corporate interests. A few years ago, they got $100 million from the Canadian and Ontario governments to expand operations in Guelph without any indication that those workers would be unionized, and their existing workers are not unionized. Yeah. Another corporation.
By the way, I'm just going to jump. It occurred to me. We talked to you about this on the show before, on this matter of, oh, we're going to put a lot of money into developing electric vehicles, and you pointed out that there's no guarantee that those jobs will be union. So why wouldn't they bring that to the table and say, we're with you. We're going to fight Trump off, but you got to open the door to union plants. Even Biden says that more loudly than the leaders of Canada.
Yes. One of the jaw-dropping gifts of the Canadian government, Canadian and Ontario governments, was $15 billion, with a B, dollars, to Volkswagen for a joint venture battery plant, which apparently they're breaking ground on now in St. Thomas, and I heard Lana Payne being interviewed Friday, saying that, yes, we'll be doing anything we can to see that those workers have the opportunity to join Unifor.
Yeah, well, now's the time to be...
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
But why wasn't that a condition, as you say, of before the $15 billion was promised to that corporation?
Yeah, and if we're going to be fighting this tariff fight, that's, and you want labor on side, treat them with some respect.
Yes. Another corporation we should mention is Glencore, and I know that you know something about Glencore.
Yeah,
in the
outfit.
First announcement that Trudeau made, Glencore was listed as one of the corporations that was part of his Canada-U.S. Trade Council, which now seems to be have morphed into the Council on Canada-U.S. Relations. Not entirely clear to me, but Glencore was listed as in the first announcement, along with the fact that this council was going to be led by the aluminum industry and the steel industry, in other words, by corporations. But Glencore, which is a major worldwide corporation, of course.
It doesn't have any headquarters here.
No, they have operations here, though, including in Sudbury, because that's the corporation that took over the former Falconbridge nickel operations. And those workers, so there's 800 of them left, are members of Unifor. So that's their employer. But yes, they operate around the world. They've been in all kinds of trouble for bribery, for corruption, for dealing with very shady regimes in the Congo. The Paradise Papers revealed that they made a major deal with an Israeli billionaire named Dan Gertler to facilitate their operations in the Congo. Just a couple of years ago, they pleaded guilty in the United States to a whole series of bribery charges.
Yes.
And paid the fine of $1.5 billion. And this is the corporation.
Sounds like guilt to me. when you're ready to pay a fine that big, you did it.
I would say. And Justin Trudeau thinks it's a good idea that corporation should advise his government on how to deal with the threat of tariffs.
Yeah. And this individual, by the way, who founded it, he's a South African billionaire. He's the one that Bill Clinton pardoned on the last day he was in office. He pardoned this guy. And he had been, each of the things you talked about, bribery, corruption, all that was on him, so much that he gave up U.S. citizenship in order to escape justice. But then through an intermediary, his ex-wife met with Bill Clinton and pledged $500,000 to Hillary Clinton's campaign. And what do you know? He got off scot-free. But one of the things he said was, when they said to him, well, you were dealing in the oil business, you were buying oil from Iran, and then you were passing it to Israel, and you shouldn't have been doing that because there was a situation between U.S. and Iran at the time. And he said, well, I want you to know that I was cooperating with Mossad the whole time. My offices are open to Mossad.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, well, that's interesting information, isn't it? That's all public record, by the way.
Yes.
But again, going back, this is a company that's based in Switzerland, I think, is the headquarters. So how can unions be sitting down there with them and planning how we're going to deal with Trump? I mean, a billionaire doesn't need unionists when it comes to dealing with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the unions and you're present there, you're going to go away with your pockets empty. I want to ask you one last thing here. Why don't we have solidarity statements to and from, I'll add a bunch of words, Mexico and the United States? Where's the AFL-CIO? And why don't we have good, warm relations with the unions of Mexico so that there could be joint statements of North American workers of what they demand from these monopolists who all the time wanted cooperation from labor?
Absolutely. what is needed.
To my knowledge, the AFL-CIO, our dear brothers and sisters, haven't said a word, right?
Not much that I've seen. And
maybe they want to annex us, too.
Well, they might. There's an undercurrent, unfortunately, in the labor movement of narrow nationalism. And we remember when General Motors had announced the shutdown of their major plant in Oshawa, vehicle assembly, that the response of Jerry Dias, and we need to keep reminding people that Jerry Dias was the president of Unifor, he's getting forgotten a little bit. Jerry Dias said that the response was to boycott vehicles assembled in Mexico. That's not international solidarity. And it also was not in any way an effective approach.
Hey, by the way, wouldn't it be a great opening if they all realized that everybody ought to stand up for labor in three countries of the fair trade deal, and Mexican unions could send a message to Jerry Dias and Unifor and others, say, hey, next time don't attack us, okay? And then we can have some unity.
Yes.
I mean, this is a great opportunity for labor to wake up and to go political. They're hunkered down and say, oh, we get some monopoly has invited us to a meeting. Lucky us. It ought to be the reverse. We can say, well, we're going to take a stand and we invite a couple of corporations who will behave themselves. Well, Tony, it's been great talking to you about this. Thank you very, very much for all the information.
Thanks, Phil. Bye.
Tony Leo. Bye-bye. Tony Leo is author of a wonderful book published by Baraka Books. And we're going to have a little music. Then we're going to talk to Robin Philpott about family ties.